Hello and welcome to Lexitecture, a podcast about word origins and histories. My name is Ryan, and in each episode, my friend Amy and I bring a new pair of words to share their stories with each other and you. You can find our past episodes and the occasional blog post on our website at lexitecture.com. Follow along with us on Twitter and Facebook at Lexitecture. And if you really like what we do, you can support the show at patreon.com/lexitecture. Today's episode, Feisty Tire. Before we get going properly, speaking of patrons, we have a new one.
Oh, awesome.
So we have Alice, who is from Sweden, or at least the contribution was made in Swedish currency. So I feel like I'm pretty safe in saying she's from Sweden. But yeah, so new Patreon sponsor, Alice, thank you very, very much for signing up.
Yeah. Hey, Alice. Thank you. Thank you to you for your support and for everybody else who supports us in all of the many ways that, podcasts can be supported. Patreon is a really great way to support us. All contributions are gratefully received.
Absolutely. So, yes. Would you like to take it away?
Yeah, absolutely. I have two words to choose from. This is exciting. I'm not really sure which one to do. Okay, the word I'm going to tell you about today is feisty.
Oh, I like it.
Feisty, adjective.
Feisty.
And the OED defines feisty as, this is interesting, it says it's US slang and originally dialect, and its definition is aggressive, excitable, touchy. Which... I thought that was quite interesting. And that is the only definition given by the OED. No further shades of meaning are included. So feisty first appears in 1896.
Okay.
And it's in a book about American dialect. And there are only five citations given in the OED, the latest of which is 1968. And the latest one comes from J. Potts, Trash Stealer, and the quotation is, "He couldn't shake her loose. She hung on to his arm, feisty as a terrier." And what I thought was really interesting about this definition is that I personally see feisty as a positive quality.
Yeah.
You know, it's like somebody who is perhaps not very well behaved, but spirited.
Yes.
And has some gumption about them. Gumption's a good word. Needs more
gumption
usage.
Is a good word. Got moxie.
Yes. Moxie always makes me laugh because usually moxie is sort of defined in English as spunk, which is unfortunate.
Which is really too bad, yeah.
However, that sense, there's a wonderful Scots word and a story by Lewis Grassett Gibbon, the Scots writer, called Smedum. And smedum, which also sounds like an awful word, smedum is exactly this. It's that sense of moxie or feistiness or gumption.
Yeah.
And I think, again, in my experience of the word, feisty tends to be applied to women. Now, the OED doesn't have any particular input about that. And I don't know if you would agree with that, but... I mean,
I'm trying to think if I agree with that. Like, if in isolation, if you had asked me if feisty is in any way gendered whatsoever, I would probably have said no, of course not. Or no, mm-hmm. or at least for me, no, I wouldn't think so. But now that you draw attention to it, now that you've said that, I'm like, maybe?
Yeah.
Like, if someone is... And I think, I mean... Well, I'll save what I think because I don't want to derail it too much. But because it's a mixed bag. As soon as you said that it was sort of something applied to women or girls more often, my immediate sort of thought is that it gets a little bit less positive because of the stupid patriarchal layers involved in why it might be only applied to women.
Yes.
Because there's kind of an underdog element to it.
Yes.
Like punching above your weight class side of it is where the gumption comes from.
And I think that what you're talking about, those many layers of terrible patriarchy, I think this is why I tend to see the description feisty as a positive one. However, right. Let's face it, women are supposed to be well-behaved and quiet.
Yeah.
You know, that is part of that whole terrible patriarchy deal. So in the same way that I like when women and girls are not well-behaved women seldom make history, for example. Yeah. I think that's part of the reason why I feel like I wouldn't be offended if somebody described me as feisty. I think I am pretty feisty.
Yeah.
Whether I would like it if they said I was aggressive, excitable, or touchy, not so sure.
Hmm.
So yeah. So interesting. I'd be interested to kind of take a wider kind of survey of whether people think that this word is gendered generally or not, or indeed specifically or not. And here's what's happening with it etymologically.
Okay.
So the OED lists that it is feist, F-E-I-S-T, equals fist, F-I-S-T, plus okay. a Y suffix. And of course, Y suffixes, the OED states, the general sense of the suffix is having the qualities of,
yeah.
or full of that which is denoted by the noun to which it is added. As right. in, icy means having the quality or nature of ice.
Being like ice, yeah. Spicy. Or,
exactly, yeah. So, you know, there's hundreds and thousands of Y suffix words
yeah.
in English. But fist, this particular sense of fist,
being
is not
fisty.
One that I'd ever heard before. Yeah, being fisty, I mean, you're giggling, and let's face it, I giggled a little bit too. Because that's funny.
Because we're not grown-ups.
I'd ask you to bear in mind that whole not being grown-ups thing as I tell you a little bit about the noun fist.
Okay.
Okay? First appears in the 15th century, this is from the OED, although Old English has the verbal noun fisting. The various West Germanic languages have synonymous words representing the three ablaut types. So we have feist, F-A-I-S-T, fist. Middle Dutch has vist, and Modern Dutch has vist, which is V-I-J-S-T. And I just don't know how to deal Whoa. With words like that. So
yeah.
I'm going to have to stop there. I'll tell you a little bit more about fist etymologically in a minute. First, I'm going to tell you what it means. Sense number one, which the OED lists as obsolete, means a breaking wind, a foul smell, a stink.
Oh, okay.
And this is first cited in 1440 in the Promptorium Parvulorum. That's a good title.
I'm sorry, the what?
The Promptorium Parvulorum.
Oh.
And we have fist, stink, lirida. And then in 1511, the next citation that's given, we have it used alongside the word that we might more commonly associate with this definition. It is fartas and fistas. So,
oh,
fist
man.
Quite simply means to fart. What does this have to do with badly behaved women, I hear you ask?
I mean, there are connections. Incidentally, just as a quick aside, that book that you cited sounds exactly like the name of an old-timey shop that somewhere on its shelves has a jar full of eyes.
At least one.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, continue. Sorry.
So, there's my this definition I'm about to tell you is just great. So we'll turn to Etym Online, which has it dated from 1896, as the OED does, with aggressive, exuberant, and touchy. However, feist here is defined as a small dog. This is short for feisting or fisting with a Y, cur, meaning stinking cur. In other words, the feisty part is the smelly part.
This is the smelly part of the smelly dog.
But the smelly dog part was shortened to so that the smelly part came to mean the whole thing. So
right.
Feist was a small dog. Now that's interesting for a couple of reasons. That latest citation given in the OED, for example, the 1968 one says, he couldn't shake her loose. She hung onto his arm, feisty as a terrier.
As a terrier.
And indeed, terriers are feisty because they are dogs. Whether they smell or not, I suppose, depends on your dog hygiene protocols. And this definition is great. Edmund Line says, the 1811 slang dictionary defines feis as, quote, a small windy escape backwards, more obvious to the nose than ears, frequently by old ladies charged on their lap dogs. Just so much to love there.
A small windy escape backwards.
That's awesome by itself. More obvious to the nose than ears. Fantastic. Oh, every human being knows what that means. And I can imagine the expression of the old ladies blame on their dogs. Of the poor dog going, sure, Iris. Yeah, definitely. That smell was me. Whatever, Ethel.
What an incredibly specific.
Incredibly specific. Oh. So, of course, there's a pirate for this. I say, of course. I was quite surprised to find this. Firstly, because we go from Proto-Germanic and, you know, very much Germanic senses, the idea of the dog and the stinking cur. There are tons of words in the early Germanic languages that refer to feists as dogs. And then we get to 1886 American slang. So that's quite an interesting jump, quite an interesting journey that unfortunately I can't really tell you a great deal about. But this idea of the stinky dog, which eventually just became the word that meant stink, referring to the hole. And the pirate from which we get the word feist, and indeed the pirate from which we get the word fart, is perd, P-E-R-D. Okay. And what I love most about the pirate that gives us the word fart is that it means fart. Because
since time
as long
immemorial.
As there have been human beings, that's been a thing.
It's been a thing.
So, Etym Online notes that, this made me laugh a little bit too. So we have this idea of the stinking cur. There's an obsolete Middle English fistin, which means to break wind, which is said to be from pie pezd, but there are difficulties.
Okay. Whoa.
Yeah. I laughed about that too. However, fart and feist and fist and fies and all of these words, if we go to the University of Texas at Austin Pecorny Master Pie Etymon list, it really needs a shorter name.
Yeah.
It does indeed list. So first of all, it lists the etymon perd, P-E-R-D, to fart, to break wind, brackets, loudly.
Oh.
And what I'm so interested in here is that, you know, even within the etymology, we have this notion that not all farts are the same.
There's a gradient.
There's a lexicon of farting,
yeah,
if you like. And so we get ourselves to this very interesting situation where whenever it was that this Proto-Indo-European root existed, it meant exactly the same thing as it means now. And there's very, very little variation within that as we look at the reflexes and the cognates of this pie root. So we get Old English fjortan, which means to fart. We get Middle English farten or ferten, which also means to fart, pops up in Chaucer frequently. Then we have fart as in English, and then in both middle and current English, we have partridge. Now, a partridge is, of course, a small game bird, and the name of Steve Coogan's wonderful, wonderful radio host character, Alan
right.
Partridge. And I find myself really interested as to why it is that in both Middle English and in current day English, this word that's being used seems to have something to do with farting. Now, in Scotland, partridges are fairly common and they generally appear about the same time of year as pheasants do. And I remember as a small child getting the two mixed up and calling them partridges and peasants. So that really made me laugh because I thought I was just being silly. But in fact, it would seem that partridges are a bit farty. However, you can take your mind out of the gutter, because both Inky Fool, blog.inkyfool.com, they have an entry in 2010 on my birthday, which I was very pleased by the synchronicity of that, which points out that when a partridge takes flight, the low, loud beating of the wings sounds like the clapping of the buttocks when the inner gale is liberated. This also made me laugh a lot. What a beautiful way to describe
the
a fart.
The inner gale is liberated.
And, of course, if you want to find out about obscure bird-related etymology, where else do you go but to Haggard Hawks?
Right, of course.
And, indeed, the wonderful Paul Anthony Jones has an entry about partridges. After a tweet that pointed out, because of the peculiar noise that birds' wings make when they take flight, partridge derives from a Greek word for flatulence. And the Haggard Hawks entry points out that partridge is an English development of an old French word, pertus, which is itself based on a Latin word, perdix, whose roots lie in ancient Greek. And it's that original Greek root that's believed to be entwined with perdesthai, a Greek word meaning break wind.
Right.
Now, of course, it would be negligent of me not to find out a bit more about the Greek word perdesthai. This seems to be where... where things get interested. And I found myself on a really cool website called sententieantiquae.com.
I love that site.
And an entry that is titled Greek Words for Flatulence. Because, God bless the Greeks, there are several. And so the author points out Greek has several synonyms on a sliding scale of politeness.
Okay,
so we
right.
have, from Aristophanes, clouds, I revere you men of much honour, and I want to fart in reply. And many farting words. First we have bedenosthai. This means to evacuate one's stomach, not to fart. This is also used locally in our time, for we say he farts bidet. There's another citation given here. This is a really cool article. We also have skordinasthai. This means to stretch one's limbs beyond the limits of nature while yawning from weariness. Aristophanes says in the Acharnians, I groan, I yawn, I stretch, I fart. So some people use this verb for people waking up from sleep, you know, when they do that big stretch thing. But it's a word that Aristophanes certainly used for farting. We've then got two sort of slightly more polite words that mean farting. There's apopnein and diapnein, with that PN sound giving us words like pneumatic and pneumonia. And it makes sense then that apopnein means breathing out.
Right.
Diapnein means releasing air, which is, of course, much more polite than the next entry in the article, which is apopsophane, which means breaking wind.
Right.
So, Greek, it's all Greek to me. Apopsophane does mean to fart, but it's still fairly respectable, but it's not as polite as breathing out or releasing air. So, I feel like... given that an old lady with a lap dog might want to have a backward, what was it, a backwards release of air or wind.
Yeah.
But I really, really enjoyed the fact that farting has always been there, but that even in, you know, even in Aristophanes' time, there were different ways to talk about it and different types of farting.
Yeah.
So
more
from,
obvious to the nose than the ear.
Yeah, from flapping partridges through to farty Greeks takes us all the way back to the stinky dogs, which then were shortened to be feists, and then that Y suffix added to become feisty.
Oh, man. What a journey. I am only ever going to refer to it as unleashing the inner gale, though, because that... is just the best.
A small windy escape backwards really, really.
That's what it was, a small windy escape backwards. Those are my two terms,
quite
depending on the context.
A small windy escape backwards. Like, there might have been a plot, a plan.
That's a scene from a Studio Ghibli movie.
Exactly. But yeah, more obvious than nose than ears is pretty brilliant too. So given that I felt that Feisty might be a little bit gendered, I know that another layer of the terrible patriarchy likes to suggest that women never A, smell bad, or B, would do anything as vulgar as to fart. But frankly, I'm a woman and I can tell you that that's not true.
Well, your dog sure does a lot of it though.
What do you do if you don't have a dog?
That's true. That's why. Maybe that's why dogs were domesticated in the first place.
Maybe.
Nothing to do with keeping crops safe or warding off predators. It was just so you had someone to blame for the stink. Amazing.
So yes, Feisty.
Feisty. That. Wow. That's. Okay. That's very cool. I like it.
I figured that if I could talk to anybody about farting for half an hour, you were the dude.
That was, yeah. Never in a million years would I have made any of those connections at all.
No, exactly. I really enjoyed looking into this word.
Incredible. Wow, okay. So the word that I've got this time around is tire.
Ooh.
And I'm kind of going to go, it's sort of cheating because it's kind of two words, but one of them doesn't take very long.
Okay.
So tire, T-I-R-E, or in Brit speak, T-Y-R-E.
Okay, so my first question was, which sense? But I'm glad that you're talking about T-I-R-E versus T-Y-R-E. I'm interested already.
Well, I don't have a ton to say about that particular difference because that seems weird, and I'm doing both senses. So we'll start with a verb.
Cool.
Which I realize is not spelled T-Y-R-E, it's just T-I-R-E. But this is very, very old. This is the oldest form, as in to tire, to be tired, you know?
Yeah, sure.
It is from Old English. The earliest OED citation is from 725, and it's teorian.
That's extremely old.
R-A-N, very, very old. The earliest earliest usage, I've gone and stolen my own thunder. The earliest usage in the OED is basically it means to either to stop or to run out as a supply.
So
the grain stores are beginning to tire.
Sure.
Are beginning to run out. But there isn't, from around 1000 AD, there's a citation for basically the use we know of now to be worn out from work and just to be, to have your energy levels depleted. But that's the that's the supposed connection there is like...
To run out of a quantity.
Yeah, and to run out of energy is why we get tired. So
yeah, cool.
That was where it started. Etymologically, this use is from, again, Old English, but beyond that, of uncertain origin.
Ooh.
The way the OED runs with this is it says, as this verb does not appear in the cognate languages, it is difficult to determine its original form in Old English, and the phonetic relations between the Old English and Middle English forms, especially the origin and history of the current form tire, which appears first in Scottish writers in the 15th century.
I love it. So the rest of Europe don't get tired, but British people do. How fitting.
Yeah. The American Heritage Dictionary of Indo-European Roots says that it's possibly from a Proto-Indo-European root meaning to lack or be wanting.
Okay.
But that's the only place I could find that connection. And even they were like, maybe? Who knows? So, but yeah, so as a verb, to run out of energy or to run out of stuff from first millennium and very, very old. And that's that. As a noun, the T-I-R-E-T-Y-R-E thing, it goes back to the 15th century.
What?
Yeah. Which I was surprised by too. 1485. And
does it mean the same thing at that time?
Well,
I am skeptical, but also mind blown.
Yeah. I mean, sort of. So just as an aside, wheel goes back to Old English and Old German, Old Norse as early as 785.
Okay.
So it doesn't mean wheel. and didn't mean wheel, because there was a wheel, already a word for wheel.
Sure.
But the earliest usage in English of tire as a noun was for a flat, basically flat piece or pieces of iron that were hammered around the rim of the wheel of a carriage to keep the wood safe, just to add extra enforcement for the wood of the wheel.
So essentially, it means the same. Then,
it sort of means the same thing.
As it does now, it's just that the materials got better.
Just different stuff. Yeah, so literally just, yeah, just a flat sheet of metal, the width of the wheel, all the way around to stop chunks of the wood from being rotted away or chipped away or whatever.
As a small aside, I don't know if... I do know, you absolutely will be interested to hear that there are lots of videos on YouTube of people doing things like that, like hammering iron rims onto wooden wheels in various
cool.
kind of historical reenactment museum type places. There's neat. One in particular, it takes about five guys to do it. It's beautiful.
That's very cool. Yeah, I am interested in that.
Yeah, go and check out videos of people making, like, basically you're talking about like carriage wheels, cart wheels, in the sort of traditional ways that was done. Super cool.
Yeah, that is neat. Interestingly, originally it was a collective singular. So
Ooh.
The tire of a carriage referred to
all of
the bits on all of the wheels. That was
nice.
That carriage's tire. So there was a 1753 citation from the Scotsman magazine, which is neat. And I believe I found and downloaded a PDF, so maybe I'll throw that up someplace. But
ooh, nice.
It's quite a good example. So it's talking about, again, people argued about sort of fairly mundane laws for forever, obviously, because that's where this is from.
But people don't do that anymore.
No.
No,
it's people
never.
Arguing about a bill that was before the House of Commons to regulate the width of carriage wheels.
Ooh.
Yes.
It's
yes,
a special
indeed.
Sort of human being, isn't it?
So the idea was that if carriage wheels were, I presume this is what I can glean from this. The idea is that because roadways, of course, were not paved.
Sure.
The heavier the carriage... These people were saying when carriages are really heavy and they have very narrow wheels, they just carve these deep grooves in the road and they're mucking up our roads.
Yeah, sure.
So the way it says here is, it says, the roads will never be restored to good condition given the weight of some of the carriages that pass over them, quote, unless the wheels and tire of such carriages were made broader. So that's right. That collective singular. There were the wheels, but the tire also has to be made broader, but it refers to all four of the...
I love how wrong it sounds when you get singulars and countables wrong. Like
yeah.
It's so wrong that I do it on purpose sometimes. Like, I'm very fond of the word pant, singular.
Yeah.
And scissor, singular, is another one that I like a lot. So the carriage and its tire. That's cool.
Yeah. So... And interestingly, another sort of slight tangent, this 1753, I was going to say episode of the Scottish magazine, I think issue is probably the right word, of the Scotsman magazine.
Oh, words, you're so funny.
It gave an insight. So this was apparently before the verb table was commonly used, as you know, you're in a meeting, you're going to table an issue for now.
Mm-hmm.
Because... This talks about, in this particular debate in the bill they're debating here, that, quote, the petition was ordered to lie on the table until the bill should be read a second time.
Oh, nice.
Whereas now it would be, you'd just say the bill was tabled until the second reading or whatever.
That's like but etymology in action. You just spotted
exactly.
a wild etymological thing.
There it is in the wild, yeah. It was ordered to lie on the table, so...
Sometimes I don't even understand my own jargon, Ryan. I'm so technical.
it's just way, yeah. You gotta tone it down a little bit. Easy there, professor.
Yeah.
Anyway. So, tire, as a noun, was around long before rubber was a thing that was used to make them. But they were singular. 1803 is the earliest one I could find of the plural tires being used.
Nice, okay.
So each wheel had its own tire. And rubber tires, of course, don't show up until the late 1800s, when rubber became a thing. And they were originally...
I feel I must... This is that you're contractually obliged as a Scottish person to point out that both the vulcanisation of rubber and the tyre is generally attributed to Scotland.
I mean, I think you'll find the vulcanisation of rubber was Mr. Spock, who was not Scottish, but... right, yes.
Wait, I cannot let the moment go past without mentioning John Dunlop, because John Dunlop, Scottish inventor, you know, Scotland's quite a small country and it's got lots of beautiful things and it's a really, really scenic, gorgeous place. But, you know, essentially we're quite a small country and we're sort of in this situation, we're in this relationship that we're not really happy about, and it's been going on a while, it's kind of difficult to leave, but we have to make the best of what we've got. And what we've got from that sort of period of history are lots and lots of cool inventors. So
right.
Scottish people like to talk up inventors. Postage stamps, invented in Scotland.
Oh.
Rubber tires, invented in Scotland. There's lots of other things too.
Neat.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Originally for bicycles, obviously, because cars weren't around by that point, but soon afterwards. Now, etymology. This is fairly simple, but very neat.
Cool.
So this form of tire, and the reason that it's a collective singular, is it comes from an earlier noun form. So I said this, the current form is related to carriage wheels, was from 1485.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the first time that tire was used as a noun, because that goes back to the first half of the 1300s, where it was a short form, it was an abbreviation of a tire, and it meant apparatus, equipment, outfit, dress, or apparel.
The things that the wheels wear.
And it was the things that the carriages wear, or the wheels wear, yeah.
That's super cool.
The attire of a carriage... were those extra bits to protect the wheels. And it just was shortened to tire. But it was shortened to tire, so it did mean like someone's, like the soldier's gear was their tire.
Was it a tire?
Or the formal dress for a certain occasion or in a certain area or whatever was the tire of the court or whatever, however you want to use it.
Nice.
Further back, a tire was a verb before it became a noun. And to attire something is to equip or to put in order for a certain task. To arrange, basically. And it came from the French. This is like that opportunity where it's like a phrase that becomes a word.
Ooh, nice.
And so it came from the French, à tirer, or à tire, meaning into row or order. And it's where we get the word tier from, T-I-E-R.
Super cool.
Like a tier is a row or order. Once everything's been classified and set and put in its place, it's been sorted into a tier.
And so
but that's the same origin.
Align things, to put things into a line is to attire them. Nice.
So to attire something was to equip it or put it in order for a certain task, which then became a word for the attire
stuff
of something
required.
Was its equipment. Which was then shortened to the tire of something was its equipment, and so the tire of the carriage were those iron bits, and eventually the tires of a carriage, because there were four of them, and then that's where we get tire from.
That's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of cool. As far as I still don't know why it happened, but
is
the T-Y-R-E...
Is this the bit we're going to be snotty about how the British English word is technically spelled incorrectly?
No, well, yes.
Ah, go on. You never do that, and you have so many opportunities where you could.
I should do it, but I don't. Well, it's interesting because what I don't understand is why the Y came back. Because originally everything was interchangeable, and nobody gave a crap which letters you used, as long as you knew what you were saying. So tire was spelled T-I-R-E and T-Y-R-E more or less interchangeably for the longest time. But then the T-Y-R-E spelling just went away for centuries.
Hmm.
Like it was gone for a long, long time. And universally, it was T-I-R-E no matter where you were. And then for some reason, and I'm realizing now as I'm looking through my notes that I didn't actually jot down the date that it reemerged. But It came back in specifically in British English, the T-Y-R-E spelling. I believe it was somewhere around the 1700s.
Now, this is interesting because when you're saying, I don't know why it came back, I found myself idly musing about whether it came back because of stick up their backside old white dudes who said, oh no, spelling is a thing and you all have to do it the way we say. And I mean, I'm taking a bit of a leap here, but quite often those people are the ones who say, oh yes, the American spelling, the wrong one.
Right,
and
yeah.
Then I trot out my ever-growing list of, well, in fact, I think you'll find, because getting to mansplain to a man is just so delicious. So math and maths, for example, that really, really rips their knit in. But I'm going to say that it was probably given a Y. Like, I could look kindly on the rich old white dudes and say it was possibly just to differentiate it from to tire, you know, the verb.
Right.
But then again, I suspect there may have been the notion of, well, we are going to spell it this way because we say so and now everyone else is wrong.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of how spelling came about.
Those are both entirely possible. I don't know which one is right, but I can see my way clear to being like, yeah, both of those are absolutely believable. Like, but I just thought it was interesting because I at least expected it. If they were interchangeable, and then in like the 16, early 1700s, when dictionaries and grammar and codified spelling really came into its own, somebody at one point, probably Johnson, picked one and just said, this is the one we're going
this
with. This
is the one. Yeah,
that's one thing. You know, if they're both in, they're both just this big muddle, and then someone just grabbed one out of a hat and said, "Okay, this is the one we're going with," and then Webster went, "No, this is the one we're going with," because he liked to do that and dropping the U in color and that kind of thing to simplify or at least rationalize certain things of English spelling.
I do very much like to. I don't actually know enough about the historical dates of Johnson and Webster and their ilk on opposite sides of the Atlantic to even know if this is vaguely possible. But I do like to think of them basically locked in battle, going, well, fuck you, other side of the Atlantic. No, fuck you, the other side of the Atlantic. We're going to spell it this way and there's nothing you can do about it. Ha! So that's sort of how I imagine it going down.
Yeah, I think so. And Canada's up here. Just make up your mind. We can only hold so many spellings.
Listen, I still don't know if I can believe Canada after your story about your birthday. I'm so horrified by it. So horrified. Ryan went out to a bar on his birthday.
Yes.
It was an open mic night in the bar. There were musicians there. All of whom you knew, yes?
Yeah, most of whom I knew, yeah.
And it was a bar, so there were other people there too who were just there to drink and be in a bar. It was Ryan's birthday. He had a few drinks. He was wearing a white shirt and somebody clipped a Sharpie to the back collar of the shirt. And so, of course, people began writing on the shirt. Now, this is the bit that it's literally keeping me awake at night because it flies in the face of everything that I thought I knew about human nature. Nobody drew a cock and balls on his shirt. Not one single person.
I was shocked.
Neither friend nor stranger nor drunk nor so. Like, not one of the people in that bar thought, do you know what that needs? It needs an old-fashioned, traditional, schoolboy-looking cock and balls.
Yeah, just nobody.
So I can only presume it's a Canadian thing. And that's, it's genuinely... It's giving me cause to reconsider everything I thought I knew about Canada.
Yeah, point of order, it was actually a light green animal from the Muppets shirt that a friend of mine found at Value Village, which was incredible.
It does sound fantastic. I would have been a bit upset if people had wanted to write on my animal t-shirt.
Well, that's why I was sort of, it was a case of, I'm going to go with this because I think it's kind of fun. But I'd like it to just be on the back, A, so that you don't mess up the cool animal on the front.
Yeah.
But also, you know, if need be, I can just wear it under hoodies from now on.
Yeah.
If it's no longer appropriate for public attire. But yeah, I got home and I was like, well, the next, I got home, and then the next morning, I was like, I wonder what the back of my shirt actually says, and how much trouble am I going to be in for wandering around if I walk around with this? And yeah, not a single person. They were universally just
wild.
Lovely, nice birthday wishes and stuff like that. So I was like, that, wow.
That's what sort of utopia is this? I don't know. I don't know if that's the accurate word. I don't know if I'd want to exist in a society where nobody draws a spunking cock. You know, it's just all wrong.
A feisty one, if even.
Feisty. No, I don't think it needs to be feisty. Oh, that's unpleasant.
There's an image.
Stop. Talk about something else immediately.
But anyway, back to tire. Yeah, but if it was like a case of the two sides squared off on either sides of the Atlantic and said, well, we're going to grab this one, you guys grab that one, however aggressively they did that and just picked it, that would be one thing. But it's the fact that it was resurrected after a couple hundred years. They reached way back and picked one from 300 years before and said, now this is our spelling. So that's part of why I think it might have been with the intention of differentiating between the verb to be tired and the noun. But it also may have been just a slightly misguided attempt to be like, well, this is the real way it was always supposed to be spelled, forgetting that it was always spelled both ways.
Yeah.
And it was just snootiness that led to that. But I don't know. It doesn't
matter. This is kind of what amuses me so about people who get into really heated arguments about things like spelling, and that's not a real word, you made that up, and you know, all that sort of thing. It's like, but they were always like, both were always allowed, always.
Yeah.
Until somebody decided that they could be snooty about it. And frankly, who's got time for that? You know, just.
Well, and usually their snootiness was in vain anyway.
Exactly.
Like they were like, this is how it must be done. And everyone else went, I don't think so.
I don't think it should. Yeah.
So anyway, but yeah, so tire. I thought that was kind of
super cool. Yeah, I like that.
I don't even know
lot.
Why I looked it up at first, and I just happened upon it and went, there's way more to this than I thought.
I love the notion that it's the things that the carriage wore.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really cool. Tire. So, feisty tire.
Feisty tire. Slick.
Feisty tire is also beautifully a beautiful assonance, which is, you know, my favorite thing in the world. So
I do, yeah.
Happy,
I love
happy.
A beautiful assonance.
Me too. Nice assonance.
Kind of an assonance man myself.
Oh, we are so funny. Chortle, chortle.
And that's it for another episode of Lexitecture. To get in touch with us about something you heard in this episode, you can email us at words@lexitecture.com. You can also follow along and talk to us at Lexitecture on Facebook and Twitter, and at Lexitecture Podcast on Instagram. For back episodes and the occasional blog post, visit us at lexitecture.com. Thanks very much, and we'll talk to you again soon.